everybody, and welcome to the Pafalvi podcast. And I'm very excited about this, as it is my first time into the realm of podcast. And the main reason why I'm doing this is I'd like to bring a community, or indeed a tribe of people, together over the whole series. I suppose you could say it's a 64-year-old looking back on his life and seeing what happened in between, the people I have met, the people I admire, and indeed lots of the lessons that I have learned. So in this podcast, we will have lots of different things. We will have adventure travel. We will be doing the champion mindset. But most of all, it's going to be about trying to have a healthy, sustainable lifestyle, about, you know, endeavouring to follow your dreams, your passion. And remember this, you're only going to get one life. That's it, one life. On average, according to statistics, and I'm a big man into statistics, you know, we only live on average, and that's the average living, 80 years. And that's for most people. 50% of everybody we know that will be born on the same date of us will be dead by the time they're 80, and indeed 50% may be geriatrics. So, you know, and you can die anywhere in between. So my whole belief in this podcast, building this tribe, building this community, is to have a healthy, sustainable, enjoyable life. And indeed, do whatever you want to do while you still have the time. So that's it. Now, let's see. A brief introduction first to myself. Now, some of you will know me, others won't. My name is Pafalvi. And I'm a full-time explorer, adventurer, a serial entrepreneur. I have been involved in mountaineering for the last 30 years. And for 7 months of every year of that period, I've traveled the world trying to seek out what it is that has driven man since the evolution of the species. And that in turn allowed me to do many crazy things. You know, some people say I'm mad. But believe it or not, in the mad world, it's only all the mad people are sane. So therefore, if you want to express a bit of madness, you're in the right place. And hopefully everybody else will want to be doing that madness too. I'm here to share stories and the knowledge I have learned, but not alone the knowledge I have learned, but indeed of the people I will be speaking to. And lots of those will be very interesting speakers, which will have had amazing lives themselves. As well as that, we'll be doing a lot of the learning in relation to what we have learned from our past lives. As a coach, I do realize that, you know, coaching is about, you know, expressing stories and inspiring people for themselves to be motivated to get up, get out, stay fit, and indeed, more importantly, is to follow their own dreams. Well, let's go back a bit and let me tell you a little bit about myself in relation to where I lived. You know, how I came through my life, and I think it will give you a better insight into what it is that makes Pafalvi thick. I don't mean to say with a thick neck, but I mean to say thick as in TikTok. And it all started for me, I suppose, in relation to the earlier years of my life when my grandmother, Mary B. O'Callaghan, who was a carter, that meant she sells secondhand clothes in a mart here in Cork City, where I have lived. I'm now living in Kerry, by the way, I suppose, for the last 25 years. So I'm a Cork man living in the kingdom, which they say is the next thing to heaven. So my grandmother, I went to live with my grandmother when I was six because all her children had left, got married. And the thing in Ireland was that, you know, you'd always protect the elders. And even to today, like, I have a huge interest in this elder thing, as I have set up the Forever Young Club. But after going to live with my grandmother, whose husband had left her to rear six kids, I became her apprentice. My grandmother was a hard working, no nonsense woman that was a matriarch. So you could say I was going into a matriarch tribe being a man. But immediately she taught me the lessons about hard work. Indeed, you could say it was child's labour, because I had my first business when I was six, when my grandmother bought me a pram. Yes, a child's pram. And in relation to the child's pram, she had me trained in to be a door-to-door salesman. Now, you might be laughing at that, but it's actually true. I probably was the youngest door-to-door salesman, not alone in Ireland, but in the world. My grandmother was getting older, so her job was that she used to collect second-hand clothes, in other words, the throwaways that other people had. Ireland, and Cork in particular, was going through an industrial boom. And we lived on the side of the city where we lived in an area where 5,000 government houses or council houses, of which we would call it here, were. It was where the working class and the poorer class of the city were put. So, yeah, we were reasonably poor. And my grandmother had to work very hard, not having a husband to support her. And that was at a time when it was really hard to do that. So what I did is I went up and down the steps of these council houses asking people, have you any old clothes? Right? And believe it or not, some of them chased me away. Some of them, you know, literally, you know, beat me down the steps, and others were very kind to me. So I started collecting secondhand clothes, which I would actually gather, put in my pram, tie them down. And we lived on an area at the top of a hill. And it was downhill all the ways to a mart, which was called the Cold Quay in Cork City. And I would bring my wares down to my grandmother, who had a small stall. You know, it was, you know, what it was just a little box where she stored all her clothes. And I would bring them down and she would sort them out and she'd cut some into rags. And then she would actually bring some of them, and that were good clothes, and she'd sell at a mart for poor people in the country. You know, like where you'd have farmers going to sell their cattle. And she would actually go on the back, initially in the back of a horse-drawn cart. And then when I got there, it was in the back of what we call a hayes van, a rotten, rusty tin can. And I would go with her, you know, a few days a week to sell her wares. But what she did, she taught me a lesson to work hard. You know, she was calling me her bar of gold. Now, for years and years, I was trying to figure out what that bar of gold meant. You know, it was an endearing comment she used to always make. But now that I realised that, you know, her bar of gold was the person that created the stock and trade, which cost nothing. And then what she'd do is she'd convert it into money. So her bar of gold meant that, you know, I was the one that created the product, which was free for her to sell her product. But, you know, from a very early age, she taught me about collaboration. Now, I didn't even know what the word collaboration meant. But what she did, of everything that I brought, didn't she put 20% into the bank for me? Now, she'd give me the money. I put it into a piggy bank or a jar. We bring them to the Cork Savings Bank, which that was our main local bank at the time. And we'd spill out the money every month and we put it into a bank book. And lo and behold, by the time I was 12, and that was in 1969, I had £750 in the bank. My grandmother wasn't teaching me to be a scientist, but she was teaching me the art of selling. And believe it or not, at the time, a house would have cost £4,200, and I had £750. But I remember when I was 12, you know, I was very dubious about like where I was going in my life. But one day, as I wheeled my wares in my vehicle, which was that pram, down to the Cold Quay, which was the mart in Cork. And I was coming down and there was these four Americans and they were taking photos of young, poor Irish children. And of course, I fitted that completely, pushing my pram of wares down to the poorer mart in Cork City. And they asked me, could they take my photograph? So being smart, as my grandmother always said, a dumb priest never got a parish, I put out my hand. And believe it or not, that was my first modelling job. You know, later in years, I actually learned about being a model because I have been sponsored down to my underpants for many years by many different companies all around the world. And my modelling career started as that 12-year-old child that took advantage by putting his hand out and saying, yes, can you give me some money to get my picture taken? And they gave me sixpence. But what was profound about that at the time was that they said after taking the shots and, you know, click, 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 they said, aren't these poor Irish children, they were alluding to me and some of my friends that were around far happier than their American children. And I was intrigued at this. And they said, these children are far better off being poor. Now, I was trying to relate this to me being poor because I had 700 and odd pounds in the bank. And they were, you know, relating to that as being poor, whereas I had more money than my father in the bank at the time because of my grandmother's collaboration running a business where she gave me 20% in the collaboration. So anyway, bemused about this, I wheeled my pram down to the coal quay, unloaded my wares and went back up to my grandmother up the hill, like it was about 45 minutes away. And when I was going in, she was doing the garden and I turned to her and I said, Nan, are we far better off poor? Well, if I said that, she stood up, came over to me, gave me a clatter. That's actually a belt in my cheek. When a belt in your cheek was allowed, in other words, it wasn't a violent thing that your grandmother would do. It was like when you had said something nonsensical, you know, you could get a clip around the ear. And she caught me by the ear, dragged me down the steps. There was, you know, it was a very small house. It was only about 15 feet across by about 26 in length. And I had an upstairs and a downstairs. And she reared her six kids there. But what she did, she dragged me in the hallway and into the front room. And she turned me by the settee and faced my face up the wall. And on the wall was four pictures. Now, in lots of countries, you do have four pictures. And in our case, these were her idols. So the first one she put my face into was the Sacred Heart. And being Catholic, she was really religious. And she said, see that guy there, that's our spiritual leader. So I said, yes, Nan. I didn't have a choice really at the time. And then she forced my head across the wall. And she said, see that guy there, that was the Pope. And that was the leader of our church. And I said, yes, Nan. And then she was a rabid Republican. She was a freedom fighter in her day. So the next thing she put me across and she said, see that guy there, that's Eamon de Valera. And by the way, that's the president of Ireland at the time. And I said, yes, Nan. But then she actually snuck me, put my nose up against the wall and forced me up the wall. And she said, do you see that guy there? And I said, yes, Nan. And she said, do you know who he is? And I said, yes, Nan, because of course I did, because she adored him. And she said, he's one of the wealthiest and most intelligent men in the world, and he's Irish. And I said, yes, Nan. And she said, you see him now? And I said, yep. Well, she said, my grandson, is actually as intelligent and brainier and can be whatever he likes. And that man went on to be the president of the United States, and he's Irish. Well, we put the Irish in inverted commas. But, you know, it was JFK. And ever since that time, right, you know, I've had great admiration and I followed their stories of the Kennedy family. But believe it or not, her belief was that her grandson, who couldn't read or write even at this stage, right, okay, was more intelligent than the president of America. And you know what? Who was I actually to disagree? I was a 12-year-old child that was highly influenced by my grandmother that bade into me from a very young age. And I will leave this with you, right, okay? And she always baited into me, if you think you can, you will. And if you think you can't, you won't. So she taught me the lesson always to believe in anything that I set my mind out to do. And by the way, including this podcast, because as you can well imagine, it's a very nervous thing to do. So with that in mind, by the time I was 15, you know, I was, you know, probably a good door-to-door salesman for my grandmother. My father had a business and I also took up an apprenticeship being a bricklayer. And at the time, my father's business got into trouble. And here I was now like a 14/15-year-old lad. I didn't like school very much. So I decided because my father got into trouble and that there was a lot of, you know, ill feelings about him. And of course, at the time, not realizing this, but I thought he was a fool. And I know lots of children can feel that their parents are fools. And before I go any further than that, you know, I would say that my father is my greatest mentor. You know, like we have had amazing years together. But at the time, I did think he was a bollocks. And being a bollocks, right, okay, I was angry with him, so I left school to become a millionaire. Now, I didn't think anything of this. I just knew that I didn't want any of our family to be poor again, in particular my poor mother, who was accosted by one of Dad's employees, pushed in the door, knocked to the floor, and I was there. And in actual fact, only being 14 or 15, I, you know, probably got very violent back to your man, and I, you know, had a fight with him. So I swore after that, that our family would never be poor. But, you know, you can always make the same mistakes, and this is what happens. So that started me on a career of a lifetime that brought me in to be a very ruthless, determined, focused, not such a nice guy from time to time, right? Okay, and the next years of my life as I endeavoured to fulfil that dream of becoming a businessman, a multimillionaire, and trying to do it all immediately. Well, as you can imagine, at 15 years of age, you know, I had a perception of what a millionaire was, but I wouldn't even know a million quid if it jumped up and bit me on the backside. So I went along with that confidence that my grandmother had instilled in me, told everybody, of course, I was going to be a millionaire. But of course, everyone kicked me in the ass and said, who do you think you are? You're a poor child from a poor background. You know, you're only a bricklayer. And how dare you dream about having such a dream? But in turn, I just ignored everybody. I as much as said, up your ass. And I learned afterwards, like, that, you know, I suppose in latter years, I was called the accidental rebel. It's something that was a trait in me that, you know, I rebelled against everything and everyone that told me I couldn't do something, and I found a way to do it. And I've developed the attributes of success in no matter what I would do. But lessons, and this is a 64-year-old or a 60-odd-year-old, like, you know, whenever you're listening to this podcast, you might even be in your 70s, right? But looking back on a life of lessons learned. So the lesson I learned from my grandmother, believe in yourself and believe that you can do anything that you can do. You know, and with the, I suppose, the ignorance of age and immaturity at the time, I believed I could do it. But here I was now, left school to become a millionaire at 15, and I couldn't believe it. By the time I was 17, I wasn't a millionaire. Now, you might say that is an obnoxious statement. It probably is and was at the time. And I never forget I going to my father at the time, and I said, Dad, and he said, what? I said, Dad, I think, you know, I might have made a mistake. And he said, what do you mean? I said, I'm not a millionaire yet. And he said, for God's sakes. And I said, and I was thinking I might go back to college and, you know, like the rest of my friends were doing at the time, and maybe do something in education. And he turned to me and he gave me another great bit of advice, which I give to everybody. And this is one you should take in very carefully. He said to me, he said, son, he said, dream and dream big, but always remember in following the dream, let achieving it be a bonus. So what I have learned, you know, throughout the years is that if you have a dream, dream big and go for it. It's like taking the first step. And indeed, I've done that in everything in my life since, whether it's climbing Everest, you know, doing 150 expeditions. I always come back to my father saying, because if you follow the dream, that means you'll regret nothing. And if you achieve it, and I haven't achieved everything I set out to do, but in the whole, you know, if I keep working towards it and learn from my mistakes, I do. So by the time I was 20, I was a millionaire building 200 houses a year. I did it because on the way, because of being obnoxious and the self-belief I had and the goals I had, believe it or not, I came across mentors and I came across coaches, which totally believed in the passion, the drive, the ambition that this young, snotty-nosed, poor kid from the north side of Cork City had. And I met people like, you will hear about them actually throughout, you know, these podcasts, the likes of Owen O'Callaghan, Frankie Sheehan, Joe Carey, that, believe it or not, helped the 17-year-old to turn a dream into a reality. And the lessons I've always learned there is ask and you shall receive. As my grandmother said, a dumb priest never got a parish. And I've been using that statement throughout all of my life. So by the time I was 20, I decided I'd settle down. Now, you might laugh at that one. I met a girl when I was 14. And believe it or not, I got engaged when I was 18 and I was married when I was 20. And by this stage, however, I had over £1 million. When £1 million was £1 million in the bank, I couldn't read or write. You know, I thought I was Midas without ever realising who Midas was, because people were just turning around to me and saying, how the bloody hell did he do that? And what I can tell you at this stage, it's about attributes. And it's all about attributes. It's about we all have that ability to do things. If it's a case we really want to and we give it, you know, all we've got. If it's a case we seek and we learn and we're not afraid of failure, that we have the courage of our convictions, that we completely ignore these meanie-minded critics that come out and actually criticise people without ever getting into the arena to sweat blood, sweat and tears to make a dream a reality. Long story short, I proved them wrong anyway. I made that dream a reality. But you know what? I was a smart-ass, obnoxious asshole. And whereas I attracted lots of good people into my organisation, which, you know, like, you know, you follow someone with energy. I was like someone with a rocket up my arse. And I was actually, you know, going places. And lo and behold, a lot of other people came around me and they believed in my vision and in my focus. And they too would grow with the company. I believed in attributes. And the attributes, again, that now my father, my mother had taught me, was the attributes of passion, positive attitude, believing in yourself, never giving up, hard work. Now, I do have a problem, like when people say that you can, that you don't need hard work to become successful, because, you know, it didn't work for me and it doesn't work for most people. You might be lucky, but if it's a case that you want to succeed in life, let me assure you this, be willing to put in the hard work. So here I was, Midas touch, asshole, you know, building a business that grew fairly fast. And in 1986, which is now a good while ago, there was a recession came in. And at that stage, like, we had a lot of money borrowed and I was borrowing at 2% above what we call the internet bank rate. And that was at 36. So I was borrowing at 38% over 2 million. At the same time, just to give it a perspective, the mortgage on a house was 18. Like, when you look at it into modern day terms, like, you know, it was completely madness. So I did something very stupid. Again, because of the fact I didn't have the experience, and even though I did have a board of directors, but being honest, actually, I didn't take any notice of them, you know, which was a big, big, big mistake. Because if I had listened, and this is where I learned about communication and listening, it's a very, very important thing, especially when you're younger and you're trying to succeed. If you take the wisdom of the wise old owl and you take it with the hunger of the young, it's possible to succeed. So anyway, 1986, I lost everything and I tried to take my own life through suicide. And, you know, and this is what happens in a lot of people. Like, I was a patron of Suicide Aware for a long time and I work with people like who suffer from anxiety, depression and lots of stuff like that. And I did try to take my own life through suicide, but lucky enough, I pulled back from the brink. And by the way, I wouldn't be here today talking to you about what went on to live an amazing life, you know, to have my parents still alive, like in my 60s. Well, mum just died recently, but to have two grandchildren, to have fantastic siblings, nieces and nephews. And this is what it's all about. But so a word of caution as I'm throwing it in here, and we will be following a lot of that as well, you know, throughout the podcast, about the mindset, the positive mindset, the moving mindset, the fixed mindset, and indeed about how to create a balance in your life. Because let me assure you this, I'm one person that didn't have balance. but I've learned to have balance with the years of maturity. So after that, my business went broke. And the first thing I had to do was, my father said after I tried to take my own life through suicide, is to accept it. And this is where a new area of my life turned up, the acceptance of failure. And then to learn from failure, that failure isn't failure if it's a case that you learn from it. So therefore, the fight back is about the learning and also about adopting the new positive attitude again to be able to rekindle that, the belief. If you think you can do it, you will. And if you think you can't, you won't. So always think that you can. It's about the fact that of rebuilding new teams, which I've been very lucky that I've did in relation to understanding what I had failed at in my initial team building basis. So at the age of 29, I decided that I take up mountaineering. Because of the fact, this guy came into my office one day, who was the father of one of my secretary, heard I was depressed and said, would you take up hill walking? Now, I thought this guy was a complete idiot. And sometimes we do need to take ourselves out of the position we're in, accept what's happening to us, and actually turn away from beating our heads off a wall. And I took up a thing called hill walking. And I never forget when he came in first, I just wanted to get rid of him. I said, who's this idiot? You know, I'm a workaholic, not a walkaholic. Does he not realize his daughter would actually lose her job? And I just wanted to get him out of the office, but the guy persisted. And believe it or not, he became a great mentor and indeed rescued my sanity from being in the height of depression, anxiety, also feeling that I was a failure. And I went for a small walk and believe it or not, the banks were taking me to court. At the time to take our family home, I felt I had failed my wife, my kids, my mother, my father, my grandmother, my siblings. I was a disgrace to the family. And, you know, one of the things that happened, I couldn't afford to pay the mint because the bank stopped the overdraft. And this is the thing that drove me to nearly taking my own life through suicide. Well, I went for a walk. I went up a small mountain. And sometimes it is a matter of actually changing course. And on that mountain, when I got to the top of it, even though I didn't want to do it that day, my life changed. Again, we have pivot times in all of our lives. And this was one for me. And when I came down the small mountain, and even though the banks were taking us to court, me and my wife, to court to take our family home and throw our children out of our house, I decided I would climb Ireland's highest mountain because it was like, maybe if I climbed it, I'd die. But it would be to doing something. So at that stage, it became my Everest. And this is the importance of, you know, having goals. You know, even though it was only, you know, 3,414 feet or 1,000 and odd meters, you know, this became my Everest. Someone had died on the previous weeks on this place. So I thought this would be some challenge to do. And sure, if I died, sure, who'd care anyway? But at least I'd be doing something productive. But believe it or not, I got to the summit of Carron Tuil, small mountain, it's a small mountain, my arse. It's actually 1,000 and like odd meters. And for me at the time, it was my Everest. So when I got to the top, I was so excited. Yes, I got there. And I started jumping around with joy. And I said, yes, I've done it. Yes, I've done it. And as I did this, my mentor, Val Dean, came over to me and he said, what's wrong, Pat? What's wrong, Pat? And I turned to him, quite, you know, excited. And I said, Val, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. Now, all I could think about is I got to the top of Carron Tuil. So sure, I might as well take on Everest anyway. And this is where, again, it came around to the fact of setting big goals. So for the next number of years, I went on a journey. You know, it helped me to rebuild my self-esteem. And in the times that we have and throughout life, we will all have those. There's not one person now listening to this podcast that will not have had anxiety, that will not have had these downtimes, that will not have had fear, that would not have had, you know, doubts about themselves. What I'd like you to do is to join this tribe of similar minded people, people that have gone through trials and tribulations in their lives. And join us you know, in relation to trying to fulfill your own dreams. And you too might add a little bit to these podcasts and come and talk to us. Give us your stories, your successes, your failures, your ups, your downs, and indeed the things that you want to achieve. Well, for me anyway, 150 expeditions later, I'm here talking to you about some of the experiences that I have had. Now, my adventure life was every bit as colourful as my business life up to that point in time. Believe it or not, I went on to become the first person in the world to have climbed Mount Everest north and south, 7 summits twice, lived with 32 tribes of people, learned about 18 different religions. Now, I come from a small box bedroom in Grána Brothar in Cork City from a poor grandmother that actually baited into me that, you know, if you think you can, you will, and if you think you can't, you won't. I also speak on stages all around the world. I've been a serial entrepreneur in, you know, that period of time, and all because of the fact that I decided to fight back. You know, for all of us, it's the fight back and the learning from the lessons of life that will enhance the future of our lives. So for 30 years, I went on to travel the world, to the highest, the coldest, the loneliest, the most remote parts of this planet. I have, you know, had over 50 people that I have climbed with on my expeditions that I have known have died because they too were following a dream. And I've learned lots of lessons about the quality of life and in relation to planning, communication, listening, and indeed survival. I've learned about courage, fear. I've learned about selfishness. And yes, now I'm in fear again. I hope to have, you know, a very large podcast. You know, I hope to have, you know, people coming to this and basically creating legacy for other people, because I've been an apprentice. Yes, I've been an apprentice in all of those areas that I just spoke about. Like, you know, I've been a bricklayer, I've been a builder, I've been an auctioneer or real estate. I've opened a bank with no money when I went broke. And now the fact that is I've lived my life the way that I wanted to live it. You know, I was also illiterate, by the way, until I was about 30. When I say illiterate, I had literacy problems. And indeed, since then, I've written 7 books. And, you know, you will see some of them, some of them, you know, are bestsellers. How did I become an author when I wasn't really an author, right? Okay, I was just telling my stories. I'm a storyteller. But now you may ask, what am I doing? Why am I doing this podcast? I'm doing this podcast because I believe I have something to offer. I have and I want to build a community that will create, and for me to create a legacy with the people that I've built around me, to actually go on and help other people to achieve their dreams, their goals, what they want to do in life, and say, yes, come on, go and get it. One of my greatest actually ambitions now, and people say, Pat, after all of this, what do you want to do? What is your biggest goal? And believe it or not, you know what it is? To become the best grandfather that I can be. And I'm going to tell you why, because I didn't have a balance and I wasn't the best father. And yet, my sons are still alive. We're getting on very well. Marie, who I've been separated for over 30 years, right, okay, we love each other very, very much. You know, up to recently, I had decided about 10 years ago, I changed my attitude in relation to how I would live my life. Hey, come here, let me tell you this, right? There's a great verse by Robert Service, and this is where I fit it. And I feel a lot of successful people may fit there, but I'll tell you how I turned it around. There's a breed of men who don't fit in, a breed that can't keep still. So they break the heart of kit and kin, and they roam the world at will. They range the field, they rove the flood, and they climb the mountain's crest. For theirs is the curse of the gypsy's blood, for they don't know when to rest. Well, that's very true for a lot of us that have actually tried to follow our dreams. But when I got into my 50s and my son said, Dad, you're going to have grandchildren, I decided to change. And by the way, this is a verse my mother gave me, like, you know, that the men that don't fit in. Take note of that one, because it's a fantastic poem from a fantastic poet, right? But here it goes, and this is the reason why I changed. If I had continued the way I was, it would have gone as follows. He has failed, he has failed, he has missed his chance. He has only done things by half. Now life's been a jolly good joke on him, and now it's time to laugh. Ha ha! He is one of the legions lost. He was never meant to win. He's a rolling stone and bred in the bone of the man that didn't fit in. No. Well, anyway, I fitted in. But it doesn't mean I've stopped my dreams. One of my greatest dreams is to stand on stages all around the world and to bring, you know, a story of hope, a story of belief, a story of helping others to achieve their dreams. Indeed, lately we have set up the Forever Young Club, a 50 plus community of similar minded people, a tribe of people that are out there trying to live a healthy, sustainable lifestyle and to do their best to enjoy for the rest of their life. And you know why? As my Buddhist monk mentors have told me, life isn't a rehearsal, it's a performance. And yes, therefore, here we go again. We're on a roller coaster for the Forever Young Club. I hope that we'd have 2 million members by the time I'm 80. As a grandfather, I hope to be one of the best grandfathers in the world. I also have lots of other ambitions. Our adventure company is doing adventures all around the world. Our retreats are now in place. So why not join the tribe and come with me on an adventure of a lifetime, an adventure of your life? Why don't you become the explorer in your own life? Because we are all explorers in our own lives. And join me and my team as we continue with this podcast. So where am I in my life? Well, I was asked, where am I in my life now? And I related it to Buddha. And I tell people I'm nearly in Nirvana. And the reason why I feel like this is I've been so lucky to come from where I am, from that child that was living in that 6x6 box room, have had the privilege of having an amazing amount of fantastic mentors and coaches throughout my life. I see each section of my life comes into an area where I become an apprentice. I became an apprentice bricklayer, became an apprentice business person, and moved forward and have learned. On each case, I've become the master. And now I move to becoming the mentor and the coach. So I do hope you will join us, and indeed some amazing people. I hope that you will, you know, enjoy these stories. You know, from coming in from all around the world on the aspect of the champion mindset, about following your dreams, goals and aspirations. So I think I've said enough for today. And I just want to thank you for listening in, for tuning into this episode one. We'll be having a weekly podcast from here on in. And indeed, if we find this time, we might even have two a week. And hopefully it will build up the knowledge, the information, the want and the will for you to be your best self. And if you want to contact, if you have any questions, if you have anything that you would like for us to cover, please either follow me on Twitter at Pat Falvey or Instagram at Pat Falvey Explorer, or just clock into the website. Lots of information there, www.patfalvey.com. So it's Pat Falvey, over and out. I'm here, by the way, at the Mountain Lodge overlooking the lakes of Killarney, called Loch Lean, the Lake of Learning, and in the Kingdom of Kerry, which, by the way, they say is the next best place to the kingdom itself of heaven. So heaven was filled up, so therefore God sent me to Kerry. So over and out, looking forward to episode 2. Until the next time, slán go fóill.